My name is Dustin Zahn, and this is Trainwrecks. You're going to have to bear with me. I made a crazy discovery today. I have a bottle of ibuprofen that's sitting on my refrigerator, and as you get older, you kind of start hitting that more than you realize. Anyway, I've been taking it pretty steady since I got back from Thailand a few weeks ago, and, because I got achy pains and all that kind of shit and headaches. And at the same time, I'm kind of jet lagged from coming back, but it's been a few weeks now. I'm like, man, I just can't shake this goddamn jet lag. I don't know what's happening. I look closer at the bottle today to make sure that it's the bottle that I'm looking for, and I realize on it that it's actually ibuprofen PM, which means that it's this drowsy formula for when you're trying to go to sleep. So I just realized about an hour and a half ago that I have been unknowingly drugging myself every day for the last 3 weeks with sleeping pills, and that is why it's been a little bit more difficult lately. Anyway, I'm going to power through this, so let's get on with it. First and foremost, July 26th to July 28th, 2024, it's the Great Beyond. It's a techno campout that we've been putting on for, this will be the fourth year. So if you like psychedelic techno and house music, some chill out stuff, things like that, you should try and come out to this one, man. It's going to be really good this year. We've got a lineup that a lot of upcoming people like Polygonia and Lychee and Alton Boss, who, hey, he's on the show today. We're going to give them a chance. We also got some other big shots like Rod Hod and Steve Rockmod, Wade Garashi. And basically, we're just going to kind of throw down for 3 days and have a good time. It's 1,000 capacity. You don't have to walk far. You're not dying in the sun. We're not going to bend you over the counter on every little food item or drink or anything like that. It's just kind of hanging out, and one price gets you in the door, gets you all your transportation, except for the airport bus. That's a different story. If you listen to the show, you've heard about it a million times. If not, check it out anyway, greatbeyond.us. You'll find out more info, get tickets, all that kind of good stuff. And if you're going to Detroit, we got Metaphysica happening on May 24th. It's happening at Leland City Club. We're teaming up with Blank Code. It's a party that's really starting to shape up to be kind of kickstart the weekend in Detroit during the Movement Festival. Some of the notable acts we got this year is like Mary Yuvovskaya. We got Renee Wise, Orbi. Takaki Ito is back because he destroyed it last year for Blank Code. It's going to be really impressive. Check it out. Tickets are still on sale for that on RA. It's already out on the third tier. Probably won't sell out, but get a ticket in advance so you don't have to stand in line because it's going to be kind of crammed in there. I won't go into it too much more because sometimes I go on a little long with those. So, today's guest goes by the name of Alton Boss. He is he's upcoming, but he's actually been in the game for a while. Looking at his discogs, the first couple releases came out in 2015 and 17 on Float Records. There's a little gap in the resume here, and basically started kicking off again around 2022. I'm going to have to figure out what's going on there. I'll ask him about that. Now he's a resident at Fuse, which is a legendary club in Belgium. And since then, he started his own label called Observer Station, which has been just kind of every release is pretty awesome. He's got a couple token records out that are just banging, one for SK11. Voltage all over the place. So he's making cool tunes. He's playing cool tracks. He's playing at my party. What more do you need to know? Let's talk to him. Okay, man. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming
over. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's do a little due diligence and get it out of the way. Alton Boss. What's the origin of that name?
Well, it's pretty simple. It's my family name.
Oh, well, that totally makes sense.
Yeah. It means golden head in Turkish, for
okay.
those who are wondering.
Right on, yeah. I was with a friend this weekend, and she misunderstood me pronouncing your name and thought I said altered bass. So from altered now bass. On, that's the only way we're referring to you is altered bass. So You're living in Belgium now, right?
Yeah, in Brussels.
Okay. Were you born there and everything?
Or? Yeah, I was born in Brussels. Still living there, loving it. So, yeah.
Right on. No plans to jump ship from there, huh?
No. Yeah. It's good in Brussels. There's a lot of space to do new stuff, you know. There's headroom for growth.
For sure.
Yeah.
In fact, I've, you know, with Berlin becoming more expensive and just losing a little bit of the lackluster that I had over the last 20 years, I've seen actually a number of people either going to Belgium or to Portugal. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, indeed. I mean, yeah, Belgium is well situated for travels, actually. It's like in the center of Europe, so it's interesting. And I guess Portugal as well, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So as a musician, though, are you just a producer? Are you classically trained or anything like that?
I'm not really classically trained, but I started my musical journey with the Turkish guitar, the saz. I started at like 8, 9 years old. Yeah, I had some, how do you say it in English? Like in French, it's solfège. You know, the notes in the classical sheets, you know.
Yeah, like, I had like studying some of that.
Yeah, but it didn't stick.
Sheet music.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't stick with me. I was more like listening and trying to reproduce, you know.
Playing by ear.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I took music in school and I did the sheet music thing and everything and kind of sucked at it, but I got through just fine. And to be honest, I do way better just trying to play things by ear.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like if you're a bit too trained, you're kind of blocked in this, in these, you know?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, that's the thing, one of the criticisms of all these like orchestra type people and everything is like they can play sheet music like no tomorrow. But if you're like, hey, can you write a jingle for me or something? They just kind of get stuck in their tracks, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just different strokes for different folks, you know?
Yeah,
but,
indeed.
What was your first introduction to dance music?
To dance music? Well, it started with my big brother. He wasn't to breakdance like in the late 90s. That's when in Belgium, I guess, it came to Belgium at that time. You know, like it was it was pretty popular. So, yeah, I kind of grew up like listening to stuff like that. What's the label? Like, yeah, Tommy Boy, you know, like African Mambata, you know, like Africa Bambata, those kind of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, got pretty used to the Roland drum machine sounds, you know.
Nice. Yeah, and then, so at what point did you just jump right into techno music or did you start off with, well, I mean, you mentioned that, but like, did you switch over to like house or some other clubbier format or how did that go?
Well, I actually never went to a club until I was 18 years old.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah, it was more like listening at home for me. And I actually started to experiment, you know, with like Fruity Loops, Logic Pro, like those kind of softwares. And at that time, I was more into like IDM, actually. You know, I mean, I would say my first biggest revelation, you know, that's that mind-blowing moment that you have was when I listened to Clark.
Oh, yeah, he's a badass.
Yeah, yeah, his album Body Riddle.
Trying to remember which one that was. Do you know when that came out?
Like 2010-ish, I think.
I'm not sure, actually. A little bit more techno-y, right?
Yeah,
more than usual for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was nice.
It's the one that has this track, like Herzog. Like, it's just this huge synth lines.
I got to go back on that. I think that might have even been the album that Marcel Detman remixed. Well, not the whole
maybe
album, like a single.
No, I don't think so. I would have remembered that, I think. Yeah, yeah. But I like distinctly remember, I think it was like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, I was just like digging music, you know, like at the time you're just like so hungry for new stuff, you know, and I remember listening to that and I couldn't sleep. Like I was so mind blown, you know, it was really like this moment, you know, like the revelation.
So, okay, then like basically But how did you find that album?
On YouTube, I guess.
Okay, so it's just kind like of that. A random score, exactly. Sort of thing.
Exactly. And yeah, and to come back to your question, the first time I went out, it was actually at Fuse. Yeah, the club I'm resident now.
Yeah.
And yeah, that first night was with Luke Slater and Psych. You know, that was my first introduction, like, to proper.
That's a great introduction.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And yeah, that's kind of when I knew, like, okay, I'm digging this shit, you know. Right. Like, yeah, definitely.
Right. And do you know when that was, roughly?
2012, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, yeah, 2013, I was already, like, organizing some stuff. So, yeah, the discovery should have been a little before that. So, I guess 2012, something like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then once you got the bug for techno and the nightlife, by that point, were you already trying to work on music pretty steady, or were you focused on more the DJ aspect of techno? Or
well, I've always been, like, for me, like, both of those things have always been together, like DJing and producing. Mm-hmm. Like, I never actually separated it. Like, nowadays it's a bit kind of a perspective that DJing is different and producing is different. And I could understand that, of course, you know, like, we're not all the same, but for me it's like so connected, especially in techno, you know. Like, I believe, like, being a better DJ makes you a better producer. And vice versa, you know, like, being a better producer also makes you a better DJ, you know. Like, you kind of know how to layer stuff, yeah. You know, you kind of understand.
Paying attention, you're right. Yeah,
exactly. You know, like, so, yeah, it's been like that for me. But also, like, it's also connected to the fact that I went to an audio engineering school.
Okay.
Yeah, it was also like 2012, actually, like, it all kind of came together. Yeah, I just like, yeah, I went to this school, this private school, that was really expensive, actually. And I was working as a student, mm-hmm. during the weekends, you know, at the airport to be able to afford that. And that's when I met, like, some of my best friends, you know. And
at the airport?
No, actually, at the school, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. And yeah, one of my friends kind of dragged me into, like, Fuse, like, to that first night. And yeah, definitely.
So that's kind of where it was all coming from at that point. Now, I mean, I'm curious about Fuse and all that, but actually one thing kind of dawned on me, and it's, I never really get to talk about it to anybody or anything from that perspective, but it's like, you're of Turkish descent. I guess your whole family is pretty heavily Turkish, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean... Yes, Turkish people do go out to clubs or parties here in Berlin and whatnot, but at the same time, it's sort of a, not segregated, but it just seems like a different scene compared to what Turkish people are normally getting down on.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Definitely.
So, I mean, how does that play out for you? Like, let's start with, like, for example, your family. Are they like, whoa, do they get it? Or are they, is it,
I'm a complete alien to my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they kind of understand, like, that I'm going out to play gigs and getting money for it, you know, but the whole specificities, like, all the, you know, like, the things that are coming with it, like, they have no clue, you know, like, even the music, it would just be like another dance music on the radio kind of stuff for them, you know? Like, they don't really have that, yeah. Yeah, I would say I'm a complete alien for my family, for sure.
Do you foresee, like, for Turkish people, like, ever it becoming more of a common thing for, let's say, techno music or...
Yeah, I guess with time, you know, for sure. I mean... That's actually a pretty crazy thing. Like, in Brussels, I don't know any other Turkish guy or Turkish girl who is, like, DJ and into that kind of specific techno that we like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's
even
it's
in
rare.
Belgium, like, I actually, like, don't know anybody, you know? Like,
Yeah. I live here in Berlin with tons of Turkish people, and like I know definitely plenty of Turkish people that, well, not plenty, but you know, enough that go out to the parties or work in said clubs and stuff, and but not really on the DJ tip, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I just find it interesting because it's so ingrained in the city's culture, but it's not. It's just kind of separated, you know?
Yeah, yeah, indeed. I mean, it's a bit, I don't know how I could explain that. It's a cultural thing for sure, you know?
Yeah.
But in a way, you know, like I grew up playing the saz, and like the music is actually quite repetitive, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the only thing that actually changes is the vocals, like what they sing on top of it. But the melodies, like it's just these two phrases and that would repeat, you know? And... actually, a lot of the music that's being played with the saz has also this connection to this particular part of the religion, you know, that have these ceremonies where they would play the saz and dance to it, you know. So the repetition is there, the kind of connection to the trance is kind of there, but I don't know how more Turkish people are not into this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, it takes this like permeation, and also I'm sure it's a generational thing, you know?
Oh,
what
yeah,
I mean?
For sure. I'm sure like my brother helped me, like when I was growing up, the fact that he would listen to electronic music, you know, and like with breakdance and stuff, I guess it kind of had this influence on me to be more open.
I have this double pack sitting over there in the shelves. I just pulled it up because I'm too lazy to go get it. It's this Ricardo Villalobos thing. I believe this is a Turkish group, super group, if I'm not mistaken.
İnsanlar, yeah.
Is it, or am I just being like a sort of ignorant racist sort of thing?
No. It's actually a Turkish word that means humans.
Okay. Have you heard this by chance or no?
No, actually.
Because when you were describing your music and everything, like, it absolutely is as trippy and psychedelic. I mean, of course, Ricardo put a spin on it, but it has everything you mentioned before he even drops a kick drum or anything, you know? So
yeah, can you send me that link, actually? I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Later on.
I'll play it for you after we're done with the show here, too. I'd play it now over there in the background, but I think it'll get pulled. So, do I have you in the phone here? Here you are. Cool. Sent. So
nice, thank you.
I kind of one of the questions I was thinking of, and I think I already have an answer to it, but I wanted to know how you arrived at your crazy, trippy psychedelic sound. But I'm guessing that's the roots of it right there.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to go in deeper on that a little bit later, but we'll circle back. So I noticed that around 2015 or something, you put out your first release on Float.
Yeah.
Which is just shortly after what we were talking about when you started going to Fuse and stuff. 2017 as well. Something more. But then there was more or less a pretty big gap until 2022-ish when you just started rapid firing releases out. So what happened in that period?
Well, COVID happened.
Of course. Well, yeah, I suppose for a few years, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it was... I would say I kind of had my sound a bit, you know, especially on the 2017 record on Non-Series, you know.
Yeah.
I was still, like, trying to get better and better, you know, like, just... Yeah, just get better, you know, you can be really critical about yourself as an artist, and like it's never good enough, you know, it's never ready. And actually, I'm quite happy that Float, the TWR72 guys, Roger and Tom, they were two back in the time, like that they actually... I was on SoundCloud just uploading my stuff, you know, like without any pretension to release it or something. It's just like, okay, I'm going to put it out, you know, And they kind of found me and they really pushed me to release, you know. And I think this, the first release barrier can be really hard, you know, for artists. And to have it happen like that kind of helped me get over it, you know.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought it up because actually one of the questions I got from the internet, it's this five-parter one that I think is pretty cool and I want to, nice. I think it's something that applies to multiple guests really. But, you know, basically what she was asking is that, you know, when you're first starting out with music production, there's a point where you're not quite making music that you're happy with and maybe even find it like embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
She was wanting artists to share more about that period where you're kind of like, I'm embarrassed by music and I don't like the sound.
Mm.
It doesn't sound like the music I admire.
Yeah.
That's a weird phrase or phase, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how did you get over that?
I mean, yeah.
Was that just the SoundCloud thing? Or?
Yeah, like that helped me a lot. And to be honest, that first release, it got out, I hated it. You know?
Yeah.
I really, really hated it. Like, I mean, it's this thing. I mean, I could tell to that person, like, actually, more than 50% of it is just in your own head.
Yeah.
You know, like, that stuff is probably pretty good, but I totally get the paranoia of the producer, you know, like being like, fuck, is this good? It's not even that good, you know. And then I had that first release and a friend of mine sent me a message. I don't know, like it was in the morning, like on Facebook Messenger. Hey man, DVS One is playing your track at Berghain right now.
Hey, there you go. That'll get you kickstarted for the day.
And, you know, like at that point, I was just hating that EP and just having that news was like, oh, wow, okay. Like an artist that I respect that much finds it good enough to play it, you know, and especially to play it at Berghain. At that time, like 2015, like it was a big deal, you know,
for me. I mean, it still is now.
Yeah,
but,
of course, yeah. But like, yeah, at that time for me personally, like it was a big deal and that helps you actually get a bit like across that. Not mm-hmm. necessarily
develop
totally.
The confidence sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it helps.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't remember how long it took for me to like feel confident in where, you know, like, oh, I should put my stuff out. But at the same time, I didn't really have anybody to piggyback off of. So I was sending out demos pretty early on. And to be honest, I don't know if they should have been sent out or not. It's been so long ago that I don't even remember what the tracks were. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a hard thing to get over.
Mm.
But obviously, having the peers tell you that it's good is one thing. But sometimes you have people that are kind of yes men and just tell you what you want to hear.
Indeed.
But it sounds like you had people coming to you that were they had nothing to gain from you. Well, that's not true. I mean, if they're signing your tracks, they have something to gain. But like, they don't have anything gained from lying to you. Put it that way.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it can be tricky. One of my good feedback friends was actually Circle. You know, mm-hmm.
You did a record together, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I heard everything he did. He heard everything I did. Like even the 1 minute snippets or something, you know, he's my feedback guy. Like, you know,
yes.
We would be super honest with each other. And like, yeah, like if something's wrong, it's like directly on the table. And that helps actually.
Oh, hell yeah.
Definitely.
Is he still cracking out tunes? Because I was playing
a lot for
a while. And
Yeah, he's preparing a super nice EP, actually.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Looking forward. So.
Yeah, definitely. It's super nice.
And then, you know, looking at it, you, like you said, there was COVID and everything.
Mm.
I guess that was a period for a lot of us producers. I'm assuming this is probably you too, where it allowed you to step back and really refine whatever needed to be refined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was at a time like it was, I was in this headspace where I was like, okay, I'm going to make a last sprint, you know,
mm-hmm.
because in my mind, I was like, okay, I'm going to get 30.
Yeah.
I still don't have like anything stable going on for me, you know, and I'm just going to give this a last sprint, you know, and mm-hmm. actually like thinking back, like, there is no way I could stop just making music, you know?
But, like, I agree. But, I mean, maybe stop make or, like, giving it a last go in the sense of really trying to make, not necessarily a career, but...
No, trying to get somewhere, yeah. You know? Not necessarily, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I definitely felt the same way coming out of the pandemic. I mean, I'm older than you, and time is, it's not like time is running out, but it becomes more valuable.
Mm.
And you're like, okay, well, I think I have it in me for one more go, and if it works, awesome. If not, like, you're not going to sit there wondering if there's another chance or something like that. Fortunately, the world has opened back up a bit, and I've personally been really happy and comfortable with what I'm doing, whether it's putting out music or the gigs I do get to play and stuff like that.
I love your stuff, man.
Thank you. Well, I'm a big fan of yours. So. Yeah. I noticed you played an old track of mine this weekend, The Mouth of Montreal.
I played a few, actually.
Yeah. Like I said, I skedaddled a little early. I'm a buster.
Yeah, no worries.
But thank you.
It sounds awesome, man. Every time I play that one, it's like big reaction, you
know?
Thank
you. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those few tracks where I hear it and I'm like, actually, I wouldn't do anything differently because you can't say that about, none of us can say that about all of our music.
Yeah, know? Definitely.
I had I had someone reach out to me today and bring up an old record I did on True Soul called Walk Alone. And then I'm like, fuck, that's 15 years old. I had to go back and listen to it because I haven't listened to it in probably 10 years. And I really was like, man, there's some awesome ideas in here. And these are actually really complex tracks with layers and stuff. But the execution wasn't like, I hear things now and I'm like, oh man, I kind of wish I had the parts because I could really make this fucking snap now. And it's just, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But do you feel that way about like some of your old music? Or are you pretty happy with it all? Or
yeah, I think I kind of got over it a bit. Like, this is what it is, and that's it. You know, like, it's more like, yeah, let's focus on what I can change now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you ever have that where, you know, you kind of level up each year with your production skills, but and then you go back, you listen to old stuff. And you think, well, okay, of course, that one I maybe didn't nail it so well. But then your others, you're pretty impressed. You're like, man, I had that idea developed pretty early on, and I don't even know what the hell I was doing at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of old projects. I come back to them. Actually, I made, like, I think personally, one of my favorite tracks. It was on the second EP of my own label, Second Wind, was actually a project of a... more like a deep techno track, like 128 BPM.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually for non-series, like maybe a second EP that I wanted to send to Manu, to Psych, you know?
Yeah.
But like I returned to it and it just, that's why the title actually kind of gave it a second wind, you know? And it became this whole new thing. And yeah, it's still one of my favorites actually.
Nice.
So yeah, I come back to old. Yeah, I totally get what you mean. Like, you have those crazy ideas when you're just like trying stuff, you know, and
just throwing it at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question that I kind of hinted at earlier is, I want to know what's in your life or personality that makes you make the music that you make. You know, this trippy, hypnotic stuff, sometimes chordy and dubby, like. Where is that energy or influence coming from? And not just like, oh, well, I love Luke Slater or Jeff Mills, but like, what do you think is around you that causes you to make those kind of sounds?
Mm. Well, I guess it's a mixture of a lot of stuff, you know, like who I grew up, where I grew up, like the culture I grew up with, you know, and... just like having all these influences while growing up, you know, listening to a lot of Turkish music, actually, with, the fact that I was playing the saz and, with my brother. And also, I don't know, man, like, for me, it has, I would say I have a pretty, like, mathematical mind, but I'm also very drawn to the mystique. you know?
Yeah.
To the...
the unseen of sorts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't have like a belief or like believing in like crazy shit or stuff, you know, but I'm kind of drawn to it, you know, because I feel like that's always been a huge part of humanity, you know, like in our evolution. It's always been about the, you know, like what we can explain, what we can't, trying to figure out stuff, you know, like looking at the stars and having all these myths to try and explain where we come from, you know, like...
I think it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Know? I mean, that's kind of what we've based, you know, well, like the Great Beyond that you're playing at, we based it all around that, like kind of the occult and space and just the unexplainable stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't even necessarily believe in a lot of that shit, but it's more fun to entertain the idea. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like,
exactly.
I can't prove that. I can prove bullshit that's happening in real life that's you know, in front of me and maybe a downer, but this stuff that's all kind of mystical or whatever, I'm just like, oh, that's there's something there.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, it's kind of the like the magic of it, you know.
Totally. And then so I guess this is a sidebar, but now I need to ask it before I forget. So you're talking about how you were inspired by Turkish music coming up and getting to this trippy tip. Is there somebody or some groups or people in Turkish music that are on like some really wild, like forward-thinking psychedelic tip right now that, you know, because everybody,
all of
us white people are like Aphex Twin and Attacker and all that shit or, you know, what? Like, is there somebody from the Turkish world that's just blowing minds?
Right now, I mean, it's not necessarily in electronic music, but I really like the band Altın Gün.
Okay.
Yeah, they're actually like, you know, there was this huge psychedelic rock culture actually in Turkey, like in the 70s.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You should check it out, man. There's
That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, there's a whole world of like crazy shit like from that time period, you know. And this band is actually like playing covers of these old songs, but with a more modern touch.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And that's a, I guess, a newer band, right? Or
yeah,
like
definitely.
These days, contemporary, let's say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure.
All right, yeah. I'm going to have to get that name for me after the show because I already forgot it, but it sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then at that point, like you develop your kind of, this is where I'm going with techno. I'm kind of going down this like wormhole type path, interstellar travel stuff.
Yeah.
You know, then you, I lost the Discogs thing here. Was it your label that was like 2022 or no, was it SK11 that where it popped off next after the like pandemic?
After the pandemic, we did first, I think, a track for Token on the VA. The Fuga VA. Then we had an EP on Voltage.
Okay.
It was the label of the festival that we had in Belgium, you know.
Is that one still around?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. But yeah, that was the first one. And then we had the SK11. Yeah, Sam gave us a chance to release on this label. And I think it went really well.
Yeah, it's a strong label. And I remember the record. It was cool.
Yeah, but yeah, besides that, I always kind of wanted to have my own label, you know, because, I mean, sometimes releasing on other labels, like you have to make compromises, you know?
Yeah.
Like, everyone is pretty particular about what they like, you know, and I'm sure I would be the same if I have to release like another producer one day, you know? I would be annoying as fuck, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the thing of, maybe not. Let's see. The thing of like having this freedom of just putting out what you want to do, you know? And my first EP was actually pretty deep for that time period. But for me, it was...
I loved it. I mean, the whole label's been slamming so far, but...
Thank you, man.
Yeah. And the first one was like... a little wrong in the way like the sounds like they were not really on the grid or whatever, and it was just really fucked up and cool, and that's what I want to play like mid set when kids can't see you know, 3 inches in front of their face sort of thing, you know? That's when I get going. Then I'm like, okay, now I'm in the mood.
Nice. Yeah. So yeah, that first one was kind of like, how do you say, like, you know,
experiment.
Yeah. And also like, fuck, I don't have the word right now. You know, when you want to say something like,
An expression, let's say.
Yeah. Let's say,
For lack of wording.
Yeah, exactly. Because I have this past of like really being into deep techno, you know, and I think with the non-series EP, like you could see that. And I kind of wanted to have that first, you know, like this is where I come from.
Okay. So it's like your statement, let's say.
Yeah, that's statement. The word. That's the word. Exactly.
Someone on the show is like, finally, they figured out the word. So you made the statement and then I guess we didn't even mention the label name, but Observer Station.
Observer Station, yeah.
You want to explain that name quickly?
Well, it's... Yeah, I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, okay. I just didn't know if there's a, so...
Yeah, definitely. And I also wanted to, like, you know, in techno, we have this whole kind of sci-fi techno, bleepy techno that we like to call. And I wasn't really agreeing that we immediately, like... put sci-fi with bleepy stuff.
I agree, man.
You know?
Like, it can be more than just that.
Exactly, you know? And, that was kind of the idea as well.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, there's a whole world of things that sci-fi-influenced techno could be.
Yeah.
And it's not just sine waves.
Exactly.
That stuff's cool, but, like, you know, like, I'm really into... things like Semantica and stuff like that. And to me, that stuff is even more sci-fi in a way, you know? I think
For sure.
Also, you know, so your debut on Token, that kind of had a nod to that stuff, but I think it was even cooler. Like it was, like I said, a nod to that, but also doing its own thing and like giving more emotion. Because a lot of the bleepy stuff doesn't actually have emotion to it. It's very...
It depends.
It's as empty as space. It depends, of course.
Like, I'm a huge fan of Stefan Linzati. It's so dramatic. Like, really, really dramatic. And sometimes, like, I would, you know, put it on, like, to my friends, and they would be like, this is so anxious. And that's, like, something I don't get, actually.
Yeah.
I really don't find it anxious, but I understand how it could be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that guy is fucking amazing.
Totally. I mean, he was actually one of my first friends when I first moved to Berlin, you know, because I was hanging out with Per Grinvik and his wife, Nina, who runs Apelago. And Stefan was always over there and such a nice guy. And he was making cool, bleepy, millsy shit for a while. But then just, you know, over the course of the couple of years since I moved there, like each release kept getting better and better and just cooler. And I'm like, wow, man, you really.
Yeah, indeed.
You know? So
I really love his stuff.
Absolutely. Sure. You know, there's a lot of people that try to out Mills, but I think Stefan could do it.
For sure. I wouldn't necessarily see it that way, you know. I mean, I understand that.
Well, but I you know, for sake of conversation, but
yeah,
you know,
of course,
better than the other bleepy people.
For sure. But that this whole like seeing like bleepy stuff being like Millsian, you know. Of course, I get it because he's one of the first ones who started doing that shit, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I wouldn't like to see everyone who tries bleepy stuff to be called like or to trying to do something that's already there, you know. Because I think there's a lot of stuff to do in that range of techno, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I think even on that tip, like Sine Wave Records from New York, you know, there was. A little bit of the influence there, but still just as like dreamy and deep and a little bit of literal sine waves, but also FM synthesis and stuff too. And like those records are so fucking cool.
Yeah, man. Definitely.
Nice. And then so you're up to your fourth. Is the fourth one about to come out or did it come out yet?
It's coming Friday.
Awesome. I'm going to play it this weekend. So
nice.
you're keeping pretty steady on it, firing them out. They're all consistent. Are you kind of just taking it as it goes or do you have a roadmap for the label or?
I kind of have, but it's not super like defined or precise or anything, you know. I kind of have this this line that I want to follow, but it's not necessarily... I'm also, like, I like things when they're, like, a bit more natural and, like, you know, sometimes you could have this crazy idea, this project, and, I don't know, 1 month later you don't like it anymore, you know?
So absolutely.
It's just like I give stuff time, you know, like even before releasing a track, sometimes it's like I listen to it for like 6 months, seven months. It's like this, it's kind of this first test that I kind of do myself, you know, like kind of a timeless test, you know. It's a big word.
100%. No, I get it. I do the same.
You know, like I think about it that way, you know, like if I'm going to be tired of it 6 months later, people are going to be tired of it, like...
I agree.
You know, in a few weeks. You know, so, like, it's kind of like the first test, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like to keep tracks, like, you know.
I do it to a more extreme level. I mean, I got shit I'm sitting on from, like, 2017 that I think I'll finally get out this year. Partly it's just me being a dumbass, and partly it's, like, you know, it never felt like the right time, and now it feels like the right time.
Yeah.
Or... there was a significant mixing error that I didn't know how to fix, or like even conceptually, like this is a cool track, but there's still a wall I don't know how to break through.
Yeah.
And it just takes a while for that light bulb to go off. And then finally I can do it. But you know, for example, like I sent you an unreleased track, I don't know, a couple months ago or something. And I think that thing's over a year old, and I don't even think that's going to come out this year because I'm still not 100% on it. I like it, but, you know, I think sometimes it's got to marinate, you know?
Is it like Coral something, right?
Yeah, Coral.
Yeah.
I mean, that won't be the title when
it comes out. But yeah, no, I played it a few times, actually. The vibe, the general vibe
of
the whole track.
It has a good groove to it. I just want to make the sound design a little bit more... exciting, because I feel like it's almost too easy for me to do chord stabs or something right now, you know?
Yeah,
but I can maybe understand. That's just what it's going to be. Who knows? Like, time will tell, as you said. And if you do the timeless test and you feel like, okay, I don't hate this track, whether it's 6 months later or six years later, that's a pretty good reason to put out a track then, in my opinion.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely. Like, one of the tracks on the new EP, I think I've been sitting on it for 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean... It's one of those, like, I sent to my friends, and they were like, yeah, I'm not sure about this track, you know? And I don't know, like, inside me, I was like, yeah, but there's something, you know? And I played it out, and it's one of those tracks, you know, like, when you listen at home, it's like, it's not bad. But when you play it on a sound system, it takes, like, a whole other dimension, you know? Like...
I get it.
Yeah, you have some tracks like that. Like, they sound super weak at home. But then, like, when it's amplified, it's taking, like, a whole other dimension, you know? And you're like, wow, okay.
It makes sense.
You know?
I totally get it. In fact, now that I think about it, we were talking about, like, Millsy, bleepy shit. I have one of those tracks. It definitely leans more towards the sine wave thing. And every time I play it out, maybe it's just because I'm dropping it at the right time, but it kind of, like, glues the fucking room together almost more than any track in the set.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man... I don't care when, but this is coming out on one of my records. I really love this track, even though it's maybe one of my most technically boring ones or something. Yeah. And I send it to other people. They're like, yeah, it's cool, but they don't really get it. I'm like, but when you hear it at like 5 a.m. on the dance floor, you're going to be like, fuck, yeah, that makes sense. You know what I mean? And I'm like very confident in that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's like, when actually you should be confident with yourself. Yeah. And
it'll sell 2 MP3s on Beatport. You know, it won't end up in any magazines, but that record's going to fucking rock at 5 a.m., I promise you.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you got the label, Observer Station, 4 records out. You've been putting out releases on Token, keeping it pretty steady.
Yeah.
Are you working in the studio every day, or are you doing it in, like, periods, or...?
Well, it really depends, you know, I mean, with time, I have so many projects that are like open-ended, you know, so I can just like come back to it. And yeah, I mean, if I really put myself to it, I don't know, like next week I could have 2 EPs ready, you know, because it's just like projects that are there for such a long time. And they're like the vibe, the essence of the track is there. It's just like these finishing touches, you know, and I always give myself some time to do those because, like, yeah, the saying, you know, the devil's in the details, you know.
Absolutely.
So, like, yeah, I have a lot of stuff ready, so I don't really pressure myself, you know. I'm just waiting for the right moment, you know. And yeah, sometimes it can just be like after a super tiresome day, like, and I come back and I'm like, should I open Ableton or not, you know? And then I open it and I do my best track, you know. And yeah, it's just like I like those moments, you know, so I don't really pressure myself.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Pretty similar in that regard. And then when you do sit down to do these tracks, do you try to go into the studio with a concept or idea, or do you just kind of throw it at the wall and see what happens?
It's kind of both. Yeah. Sometimes I will have this specific idea, you know, and yeah, it's always really hard to get what you want. You know, like if you have a preconceived idea, it's usually really hard, you know. But yeah, I guess with time, like I spend a lot of time in the studio, you know, so... Yeah. Like, I could get really close to it, and sometimes it happens and it's really satisfying, you know, you're really happy about it. But for me, usually it's more like, how do you call it? Like, you know, you have this game, in French, it's like Le Cadavre Exquis. It's like this surrealist game, you know, where like people just say random words, you know, okay. And then they check what the whole phrase is. Like if it has a meaning or not, you know.
Okay.
For me, it's more like that. I just like vomit it out, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I will check it like halfway through, like, okay, what is this? You know, I'll try to identify like, okay, who are you? Like, are you, sometimes I would think about like what time you would play it. Are you a 3 a.m. track? Are you like a, I don't know, like a dark club kind of track? Are you like more open air, you know?
Like absolutely.
And it's this work of like putting stuff out without thinking, then having a minute to think about it, like, okay, you know, where do we go? And then, yeah, it's a mixture of a lot of stuff, actually. Yeah, it's pretty complex now that I think about it, you know, to try and explain it.
I often say one of the, it's fucking bizarre how, you know, we try to make the most, well, most, a lot of techno producers try to make the most simplistic, minimalistic music we can.
Mm.
We put so much thought and effort into it, and we want it to do as little as possible to have the biggest effect possible. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not easy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, if it was easy, there'd be more people putting out music. And,
yeah.
Well, there's probably enough people putting out music already as it is. That's
for
arguable.
Sure.
But,
for sure.
You know, there's different processes. Like some days I'll just work on sound design bits or just drum loops, and then I'll try to cut and paste stuff together. But let's say I go to the studio and I have a good day and I kind of bang out a pretty great idea in three or 4 hours or something. At that point, you know, maybe that's actually 5 or 6 hours into a day because it takes a while to get going or something. I usually think like, okay, I don't know if my ears are trustworthy at this point anymore
because I've
been hearing. So I kind of just do the initial songwriting in one day.
Mm.
Then I let it, you know, marinate for maybe just a day or a couple days. And then I'm like, okay, let's go back. And as you said, the devil's in the details.
Mm.
That's when I start to get nerdy and doing the fills and the splashy effects and... You know, also the start getting really crazy on the mixing. How do you approach that?
Like in terms of mixing?
Just like writing a track from start to finish.
Yeah, for me, it's not really structured. It's like chaotic. Everything is all at once. Like sometimes, like I would have this main theme, you know, like a synth line. And for it to work, it has to sound a certain way.
Yeah,
you know, like the whole loop, let's say, because at that point it's just a loop, has to be mixed in a way where like this synth line makes sense, you know. So it's all together, you know. I don't have just like this. Okay, I'm gonna do arrangement and then I'm gonna do a mix down and then I'm gonna, you know, I don't have that. Like I don't it doesn't work for me.
I mean,
you know?
It's I guess it's not as separated as I say it is, but like will put, I'll come back to it and like fix things afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, definitely. It's kind of funny because like in the world of like songwriting and bands and stuff like that, it's really easy for people to come back and replay a melody on a different piano or a guitar or punch it up. You don't really get that luxury with techno because it is all about that exact synth patch and the smallest details of what makes it cool. So it's like, well, if this bass line, you really like it, but it's not fitting with the track, the chances of you being able to replace that bass line and it does the same thing you wanted it to do is going to be next to impossible because realistically it's just nothing's going to fit in that part, right?
I get what you mean.
So aggravating.
Yeah, definitely. I could spend a lot of time sometimes. Like, I'm really, I want it to work, you know? So with time, actually, it evolved into a workflow where, like, I also do a lot of cutting, you know, resampling, you know, actually just kind of, trying to build something with your hands, you know, like it's sculpting, you know?
Sculpting, yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm really going, like, the max I can until it fits. Like, you know, it's, like, super solution-oriented. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it just doesn't, you know? And it's so frustrating, as you say, you know?
It's super aggravating.
Yeah.
I guess we'll keep going on the studio tip for a minute here. Like, are you, like, what's your studio like? I mean, are you a gear guy, an in-the-box guy, crazy monitor guy? What's the situation?
I think the most expensive thing I bought was my monitors.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, like, my thinking back then, it was at a time where I was still working as a student, you know, during the weekends and stuff. Like, I could make a decent amount of money, you know, was really working hard for it, and I just got those monitors. It's like these Focal Trio 6BE, you know, three-way, and I had the space for it. And luckily, like, acoustically, it's not super hard, you know, and I also have a software that helps, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, for me, like, my thinking was, I really need to hear what I'm doing. Like, I don't want to guesswork or something. Like, I did it, of course. Like, I had just the Yamaha HS50s for years, you know? Yeah. And you always have that guesswork, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, sometimes, like, I have some friends who sent me tracks and they have these huge sublines. And I'm like, how the fuck, you know? And I'm asking, like, what's your speaker? And it's a speaker that doesn't go below 50 hertz.
Yeah.
You know? So
they just... It kind of happened that way.
Yeah, like, it's like throwing something blindfolded in the dark and trying to hit the spots, you know?
Exactly.
You just can't hear, actually, you know?
I mean, I got killer monitors, and basically, I'm still doing guessing work. I think unless you have this, like, crazy professional room, you're always going to be doing the guessing work on things.
Yeah, for sure.
And when do have these really amazing professional rooms, that's usually not where the best music is written anyway. Yeah. You go there to punch it up, but like...
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, some small, smoky, shitty little bedroom or something, you know?
Yeah, my studio is far from being like in a professional level, you know?
Same.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of those rooms cost millions of dollars, like just for acoustic work, you know?
Like, it's crazy, man.
Like,
you know?
It can be really, really expensive, you know? And yeah, let's...
Yeah, we don't have to go too far off, but it's... And here's the deal. Anybody's listening, you don't really need that shit. It helps. You should definitely throw some, like, I don't know, whatever in the corner, a couch or something to handle the bass. But
yeah, for sure.
I mean, man, I made records and headphones, so many records. Cracked Fruity Loops, you name it. Like, you don't need fancy shit.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, I was also super, interested in audio, like, just sound, you know? Yeah. So for me, it was making sense. Like, I was doing mastering, you know, and stuff like that. So for me, it made sense. But yeah, I would say just try to get, like, a pretty good sound. It doesn't have to be, like, a 10K setup or something, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
So, that being said, you know, it's the music business, and I'm sure now that like you're playing on the road and you're speaking to people, people send you music a bunch or you get promos or whatever. Are there like common mistakes you've noticed across people's music that you constantly see and you think like, I wish people knew to keep an eye out or sorry, keep an ear out for this stuff. So, you know.
Yeah. Having too much low medium.
Think so? Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like it's kind of connected to the first thing with speakers. Because you don't hear the subs, it's like, I think so. It's like just my theory.
Overcompensate or something?
Yeah, like you're, like in your brain, you're trying to compensate that busy feeling on the low, you know, low part of the spectrum. So I kind of see this busy low medium, like this muddy 200 hertz.
Interesting.
You know, I see that a lot, I think.
I guess, yeah, I see that. I actually see even lower when I come across tracks. There's a lot of people that want to use 808 kicks or something, and they just pitch things down low because they go out to a club and they hear somebody like, you know, Devious One or Oscar Molero or something, and that bass can get pretty low, but they don't realize that there's 18 subs pushing that sound or something.
Exactly.
But really, that track probably isn't all that bassy, and in fact, it's not pitched down so low either.
Yeah.
So it's like almost too much sub bass and not enough registering a little higher. Mm. But meanwhile, you would say that maybe there's too much in that next higher range. So
I guess like those are the two common mistakes I would see.
Yeah.
Like I was more focused into the like busy low medium part, but I guess you're right. You know, like there's also like some out of control sub,
and it affects the groove too. You know,
Definitely
pulls everything down. I mean, I've made the mistake on my tracks in the past, and now I know and I can rectify it. But it happens.
Yeah, it's also this, how do you do your kicks? Question.
Yeah,
like
you get that a lot.
Oh yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
And honestly, like what I can say is, it's also like what I say to these people who ask me this question. You know, it's sometimes it's not the kick, you know, it's what's everything around.
100%.
You know, like it could be like the simplest 909 kick.
That's what it usually is.
Yeah. You know? If you have that super like groovy bass line to it, that kick is going to sound even better, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and like everybody wants to synthesize kicks and stuff, and that's fun. But sometimes it's like if you find a good sample that works, just go for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Like I made a track and I sent it over to Truncate because we're buddies and stuff like that. And he's like, man, this kick's awesome. What's that? And I'm like, well, yeah, it's your kick. You know, it's like a sample you've given me. He's like, okay. But like the funny part is that's literally just a 909 in saturation. That's all he does. He has, there's no fucking secret plugin or something. It's just your ears. You know?
It used to be layers.
Yeah.
You know, 2013, 14, it was all about these the layered kicks, you know, like having tree kick and EQing, having the highs and the mid parts, and then the sub has to be another kick, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a crazy moment. I mean, I remember, you know.
You know, now with things being quite percussive and groovy again and whatnot. Mm. It's cool because there's like actual bass lines are coming back to techno.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. In fact, I like writing bass lines, maybe not so much in techno, just kind of messing around at home or like breakbeaty stuff.
Yeah.
Admittedly, some of them are kind of corny, but it's just fun to like get that real bounce and groove to it. And it also ends up being a more interesting groove, you know, like when you look at also other contemporary producers like Marsala or Renee Wise or something. There's so much movement in it. It's not just
definitely
rumble. You know, I like rumble, don't get me wrong, but the space in between the beats, that's where it's at.
Yeah, indeed.
So do you have any opinions on like let's say a resource like Splice, for example?
Splice.
That's the big royalty-free sample.
I don't have a lot of samples, actually. The ones I have are these samples from Mars. It's mm-hmm. actually like all these legendary drum machines.
One hit type things.
Sampled either digitally or through tape or through tube saturation. Mm-hmm. And I just have these actually, and that's it, you know?
It's all you really need.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm not really a sample bank kind of producer, you know?
Oh, yeah. That is obvious. I just didn't know if you had an opinion on people that really want to go that route, or
well, honestly, maybe in the beginning, like if you want to learn,
I agree. Yeah,
but if you want to release it, then it gets a bit more tricky because, I mean, do you really want to sound like everyone else? You know, like
well, a lot of people sadly do. It turns out,
yeah. I mean, it's just yeah. It's a bit weird to me to absolutely try and sound like with this person or this artist or something, you know, because like I don't know, where's the expression in that? Like what's the origin of your goal, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean,
like, where does it come from?
A lot of people just want to get on the road. They think that they deserve a shot too, and who knows, I mean, maybe they do. Like you said, I think it's a cool resource if you are not going to be lazy about it, you know what I mean?
Or like, but maybe just do a ton of processing on top of it.
Yeah, you make
know?
It
like
yours.
Make it yours, you know?
I mean,
then for sure go, you know?
Same as sampling disco records to make techno or something,
yeah,
you know? Like,
exactly, yeah.
I don't care if people sample me as long as they make it yours.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
That's, in my opinion, that's what the whole point of this music was. It was always supposed to be a little, not anarchic, but just a little like kind of you kind of thing.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, for sure. I guess now it's a bit more normalized, like to use samples. But like I remember like back then, I mean 2013, 14, if you used sampled, you were kind of, it was not well seen, you know?
No.
Like even presets or like, using a preset, and if somebody caught that, it would be really bad, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, back then it was all about like, you got to prove that you have a 3,000 euro modular synthesizer. And
yeah, or that, your own sounds, let's say, you know, like,
Well, it'll always be cool to have your own sound.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that should be the best goal that any producer could hope for.
Yeah,
you know
what for I mean? Sure.
Like, even if maybe you don't, it's a sound that isn't very accessible, people will be like, oh, that's so-and-so. It's undeniable, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
Is there anybody in the techno world that you're particularly finding interesting at the moment?
At the moment? Yeah, for sure. I really like what Steven Border One, he's one of my friends, is doing. You know, really, really nice stuff. Mental, groovy as well, you know.
And the releases keep getting better. And the
he's getting better and better and better. It's crazy. Super underrated, in my opinion.
He's got a new token record. I don't know if it's out yet or if it's coming.
Mm.
Strange Attractor.
I think it's out.
Okay.
Already, yeah.
Super cool stuff. You know, like
definitely.
If you compare this even to a couple of years ago, it's very evident that reworking these things and improving upon it. And
Definitely. Same for Robin Farah.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. It's like really this back to the essential.
Absolutely. Like kind of 90s, like just throwing it at the crowd,
exactly.
Playing music at people.
Yeah. Just raw, like 909 synth lines just in your face, you know, like really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
So, Belgians, you know, you name dropping them. It's like, what's going on out there? You got Fuse and are you all just kind of like vibing off each other or what's the deal?
Yeah, we're all pretty good friends actually. And we're all big fans. Like it's all good vibes, you know, like we're really happy when something good is happening to each other, like a great release. We like to you know, share it, like try to support it in the best way because, I mean, yeah, I think there's less of that nowadays, but it's important to have this local community, you know, and like have this identity actually in a way, to have this sound, you know, like
big time.
Like I remember, you know, when we used to talk about, like, I don't know, there was a specific techno, like, in France, you know, you had a specific Absolutely. Techno in Berlin.
Stockholm, you know. Napoli, all Exactly. that kind of, New York.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of liked that, in a way.
Yeah, it made it exciting or, like, unique. Yeah,
and for sure.
As the world really, social media came around, MySpace and all that, like, 20 years ago, everything became global. You know, like, during the minimal period, it didn't matter if you were Lokodice or Adam Baer or whoever, like, a techno person at that point, they were all kind of playing the same records for a while.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting in some way. It seemed like this interesting time of, like, unity or something, or, like, where everybody was on the same page. But then it got, in my opinion, old real quickly. And, of course, I like it better now. But prior to that, yeah, these cities having their own kind of flavor to it kept things fresh, you know, rather than
Definitely.
Just... You don't want to go to, let's say, Paris, and it sounds like the music coming from there is identical to Brussels or exactly. LA, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, you want that diversity, you know?
You want to hear the influence of the city.
Yeah, like something that's unique, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes things interesting, in my opinion.
So you're a resident at Fuse now.
Yeah.
How long has that been?
It's been since the reopening, since COVID. It was actually planned before.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of lost a few years there, you know.
Okay. So, you know, I guess that makes sense then. So that was kind of enough fuel to keep you going during the pandemic, where you're like, okay, if the world comes back, like,
yeah,
then I'm
exactly, yeah,
I'm
gonna
go for it.
Definitely.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I mean, Fuse has been around, what is it, 30 years now?
Yeah, it's gonna be 30. It Crazy. Is 30 now. Yeah, 2024. And
anything that's around, it doesn't matter if it's a restaurant, a club, whatever, for three decades, you have your ups and downs or whatever. Yeah. And it's always been classy and respectable.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like especially after COVID, my clock is off. But there was like some point where it was sort of experiencing, I think, like a down tick, as all places do.
Yeah.
And then it's just, as of late in recent years, it just sort of, as an outsider view, it seems to get bigger and better and like more popping again.
Yeah.
Does that seem to be the case or the feeling there?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's a new direction, actually. So
yeah. There you go.
It makes sense. It's, you know, I don't want to be like negative to the...
No, of course.
To people who like,
just different times.
Yeah. And now it's more people who are like really passionate, who's behind, you know, like who knows their stuff, you know, who's been big fans of this music, you know. So... Yeah, I mean, it has to, like, the club has to do some compromises, you know.
It's still going to have... You got to pay the bills.
Exactly. You have, like, 100 employees who are counting on you, you know.
100, holy shit, yeah.
I mean, I don't know, maybe okay, not,
but
you know.
A big number.
Yeah,
anyway.
Like, there's a lot of people working there, you know, so...
I get it. I mean, with our events and stuff in the States, there's a lot of bills to cover that.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll make your head spin.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I kind of... We don't have to compromise as much because we're able to keep our input down. But also, like, if something goes wrong, then I'll probably be broke for three lifetimes. But, you know, it's smart to play the game. Let's just put it that way. I should probably do more of that.
Just ride the edge a bit so you can still continue to do what you really like. You
exactly.
know? Yeah.
And do you see, you know, I guess based on what's going on in Belgium among... Your fellow, I guess our friends, I know those people too as well, good people, and what's happening at Fuse and whatever. Where do you kind of see this sort of techno music stuff going next? Do you have any idea?
In terms of sound or?
Sound, vibe, whatever. Like, I don't know. Not that anybody should care about trends, but you're like, I kind of see things moving in this direction.
Well, I think with time, I mean, it's a pretty common... theory, I guess, it's the wheel, you know, the wheel is turning. So, like, it was super fast. Then it became a bit more minimal, a bit slower. Then you had that more mental, like, Osgood kind of sound, you know, then the deeper stuff, more hypnotic. and then faster, groovy. I think I kind of believe that. I'm not 100% sure, you know, like I can be like, oh, this is going to be like that, you know, but yeah. I think with time, it's already starting to get a bit slower.
Yeah.
You know, there's more place for that more mental stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's kind of, yeah, it's the wheel turning, you know, and in a way it could be a bit like sad to be like, oh, okay, it's just time repeating itself. But, you know, like, I guess like at every turn of the wheel, you get all these new artists that actually pushes it in a way, you know, like it's never really like coming back to where it was exactly.
Yeah, exactly. There's always a different change to it.
Yeah.
I mean, even like the more, you know, saying like the mental psychedelic stuff deeper from, let's say, 2015 or whatever.
Yeah.
Quite different from 20 years prior in 1995. Like it was definitely the same idea, especially when you think of like old Josh Wing tracks and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it was totally a new spin. That being said, all the funky tribal techno coming out right now.
Mm.
I was, you know, when my records album came out in 2021, I was doing interviews and I was like, listen, I think that's what's going to be popping off next. And because it really wasn't yet, but I could feel it coming out on
lurking
a couple promos.
Slowly, yeah.
And I was mentioning that like I'm kind of excited to see what they do with things like using actual sub bass, because none of those records have any bass.
Yeah.
And, like new samples, mainly because when techno came back after minimal and it was stripped down, it was a cool approach to it. Unfortunately with tribal, they just started using the same samples, and it's the only difference is that things are a little faster right now, which kind of bummed me out, because I do like that stuff, and I think there's room for like a cool, I don't want to say a smarter take on it, but just a little bit more of a creative take. And
yeah,
I think that
sure.
probably will still be something that's to come, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't like it a lot, but I have a few artists that hit the spot for me, you know, like some of the old Oliver Ho kind of stuff, you
definitely,
know?
Definitely, yeah.
Like, for me, it's the right tribal, but it's personal, of course, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, some cheesiness is good here and there, you know, but not too much, you know?
Exactly. I think just the balance is the key of life, like anything, you know?
Exactly.
So that being said, like, who is your favorite techno DJ and why is it me?
To be honest, I haven't seen you play.
Yeah, that's
I would love to.
Promoters, book me, goddamn it. No, but who are your favorite DJs?
I have a few. I really, really like Donato Dozzi.
Yeah,
He's amazing. He was more like a vinyl DJ, but like recently, I think he's had his back issues, so he's more like getting USB sticks with him, you know. But I think his style is still the same, you know. It's a, I really like Oscar Millero, you know, of course, Devious One, Ben Sims. Yeah. I really like Ben Sims. Like sometimes, like it could be that 50% of the selection is not really what I like, but it's the flow, man. Like he has this flow, like it's just, it's so hard actually, you know, to have a flow like that and to,
it's exhausting,
to ride it.
But he makes it work.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen Sims so many times over the years, and it's always fun to check it out, man. Like, one of the first times that I ever saw him, I actually got to open for him in Detroit. Now they do, it's called, they team up with Observe. They do the Sunday night party. Back then it was, I think, Substance, and they did it with Function.
Yes.
Ben Sims was kind of the main draw of the night. And basically he had food poisoning for like 3 days or something. His whole weekend in Detroit was spent in the hotel. And I was like, fuck, is this guy going to make it? Because that's all I gave a shit about that weekend. I'm like, I got to see Ben Sims. You know, I was obsessed with that stuff at that point.
Yeah.
And he made it out and he fucking crushed it on three decks. Like he was not screwing around. I'm like, dude, this is a sick day for this guy, and he's still delivering. You know what I mean? Like, he got food poisoning, and he's fucking slaughtering. Fuck, you know?
Yeah, I know, he's so good. You know, yeah, they all have kind of their style, you know, and I think it influenced me like quite a lot. Yeah, I like to layer stuff, but then I like to have phases where I let the tracks play, you know, like,
yeah,
it's kind of like kind of everything I picked up from these favorite, from these models, actually, you know, yeah, like, and trying to make something of my own with it.
That's the way to do it, man. You know, use it as an influence, wear it on your sleeve, but
don't try to be that person. Yeah. No, like,
you know,
you can't.
Totally.
Yeah.
You know, of course, it's like there should be no rules, but I think it's pretty easy, especially if you don't know what the hell you're doing as a DJ. Like, if it's a in-your-face kind of party track, lots of energy and stuff, that's the kind of stuff where you want to keep it in the mix and keep it going fast.
Yeah.
And then when you do drop that deep track, you don't want to go in and out of it right away. That's usually the one where you let it play for five, exactly, 6 minutes in the journey, and then you beat them over the head again or whatever. You know what I mean?
That's the moment. Exactly. You know? Like, you have to let it play and let people actually, you know, let it sink in.
Yeah, because I've seen people do it. I've tried to do it where you maybe take all this deep stuff and you try to... I mean, and there's nothing wrong with playing all three decks at once. I do that all the time. But, like, to fly through it as fast as, like, Sims or whatever, it usually sucks.
Yeah.
You know, like, Malero's closer to that, but he still lets it breathe when it needs to breathe, and then gets a little crazy when it needs to. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, it just has to make sense, you know. Like, don't layer for the sake of layering.
Exactly. Sometimes the track's just that good and you should let it play, you know?
But then sometimes there's this track that needs a better bass line.
Yeah, of course.
That's the part of, like, being a better producer can make you a better DJ as well, you know? And you have this track and you're like, okay, let's try it with this bass line. And it works so well.
Yeah, and then you're like, do it again.
Nice, you know?
You know, that's the thing when... Tractor was a big deal, especially among the, like, AAA DJs and stuff, and Machina, and they want to, like, oh, yeah, but, you know, so-and-so, he had four tracks going, and he was rocking Machina, and I'm like, but did it need all that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think when you're just getting the performance and the light show and you have a lot of energy coming at you, it's probably pretty cool, especially if you haven't been to many parties. But if you really pay attention, you're like, does it need all these extra claps and ride cymbals?
Yeah.
And it's not like they just do it a few times a set. It's like the whole goddamn set.
Yeah.
And thankfully, that's not really a thing anymore. But, you know, DJ trends, it's always going to keep moving. Yeah. You know? Is there anybody that's sort of kind of an influence? I mean, we talked about DJs, but like...
On the producing?
Yeah, we were like, this... Not that you want to copy them, but you're like, I like where this thing is going and maybe I want to go there as well. Or
Yeah, there's been a lot of influences. Like, I mean, at some point I remember I was really into DJ Sleep, Troy Gehry.
He's from Minneapolis. He's a badass.
Man.
All his tracks are wild.
He's got so, like, stuff that are, like, so crazy. And you're like, how the fuck did you do that at that time? Like,
he's a different dude, man.
And, like, what the fuck?
But, you know, he'll, like, pull a cable out and record that and plug it back in through the effects pedals. Yeah. And that's the track. You know, like, a lot of those tracks are, like, these are the mistakes. And he magnifies those to become the hook.
Yeah.
Which is just really wild and trippy and... Man, I wish he was still putting out a bunch of stuff that, because DJ Slip's one of those names where people, especially when you're coming up, you kind of just gloss over it, and then you kind of go through the records at the record shop. You're like, you listen, then you go up to your friend, like, hey, man, you ever heard this guy? Like, yeah, he's fucking crazy, right?
Exactly, yeah. Like Mike Parker as well. You can recognize his tracks, like, from miles, like.
Really, oh, yeah, yeah. Just, I mean, like, that's his sound.
The first bar, you're like, okay, that's a Mike Parker.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And the interesting thing about someone like him is, yeah, you could argue that all of it kind of sounds the same. And it does, but at the same time, if you're paying attention to nuances, like each one is kind of different than the other. And
I
still buy each one.
Definitely.
You know, like he, well, actually it's a repackage. There's like this 3-pack thing he just put out and I have some of that, but it's all remastered. I'm like, I got to have it. Like I just collect all that shit.
Definitely.
I mean, in my office at home, I got a print of his. It was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Well, it's kind of funny. Like I bought one print from him and it just never made it in the mail.
Yeah.
I'm like, God damn it. This is brutal. And then I felt awkward. I was like, hey, man, the print never came. And he's like, all right, I'll send another, but that's it. And then this one came and I'm like, sweet. And I never told him like this, but then my stepbrother lost it for like 6 months to a year. And I was furious because he can't go back twice, you know? And then he found it in his basement completely in mint condition. I'm like, oh, thank God. And it's been hanging on my wall ever since. Yeah. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also Donato, like I like him. Like that's one of those guys who do different styles and they have their own signature. Like a lot of the times we say like, yeah, this artist has his own style, you know, and sometimes it could just be like similar tracks.
Yeah.
But you have one of those who like can just, you know, journey across different styles and it's still going to be him. That's something I'm looking up to, definitely.
Absolutely. I kind of aspire with that as well. And I'm doing that. It's like, obviously, I'm still building my mountain of tracks for that. But like, I mean, he's done so many different kinds of projects. And for me, still, my sweet spot for Donato is definitely in the hypno-techno realm.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that he does try to branch out and do things like this sort of panorama house music, or even like he did this post-punk type project.
Yeah, the down tempo stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think it's cool to treat things as an artist. I mean, not everybody needs to have 17 projects or whatever.
Of course.
But I also like his DJ sets because it's like he'll play something you don't expect and then it'll hit you over the head with like an old Surgeon record or something. And
exactly.
I saw him recently in Berlin and it was a pretty fun set. It was cool. It got a little techno-y, but because half the time he doesn't play techno anymore. Nah. Did he play techno at Fuse? Or?
Yeah, he played like, I mean, really techno. Like.
I haven't heard him play like a full-on techno set in years. I heard him down in Trezor in the basement once and he just fucking hammered it. Like,
wow. Yeah.
Well, and then the last time that he played at Berghain, I went for that. That was, God, I don't know, probably almost 10 years ago now. But that he was playing like Regis on Downwards and stuff.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I'm like, I would kill to hear a set like that again. I mean, I'm down for all the shamanic stuff too, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like, I don't know. He's just so, the way he approaches that is better than how the other people do it in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right on.
You get it.
So a couple other questions I had here. I just got to pull them up. For you as a DJ, do you have like a preferred like length of time for your DJ sets? Like, are you a longer set DJ or do you like it shorter? Or?
Well, they all have their appeal, you know. It depends. But yeah, four hour was really nice this weekend.
Yeah, man. I mean, you could really stretch your legs out. And when you have a room like that, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then, so when you do play at a place like Fuse, for example, how long do you usually play there?
So sometimes I do warm-ups like 3 hours. Okay. I really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Set the mood.
Exactly. Like starting ambient, you know,
then
the room starting to feel, the first kick is always like a yes moment, you know, taking it like from... Yeah, pretty slow to building up, you know. Depends who's playing after you, of course.
Yeah.
Like if you have, like Steph Mendicides, you can't just leave it at 1:30 for him, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it's going to be weird as fuck.
Yeah, it's going to be jarring. Exactly. But so that being said, when you're starting to hit the road a little bit more now and whatnot. Would it be safe to say a club like Fuse is where you feel most at home, or are there other clubs or cities?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Oh, I had crazy experience though. Open Ground, I'm sure you heard.
I've been hearing a lot about it lately.
Man, wow.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's crazy. It sounds so good.
What is the sound system there?
I think it's a mixture. It's a hybrid of F1 and this other brand. I don't remember exactly. Okay. Yeah. Like they have some subs that are Function One and others that are, this other brand. But yeah, it sounds so good, man. They have really like walls, like 80 centimeter of acoustic walls everywhere, you know?
How many people is this club fit? Do you know?
So the main dance floor, I think 300.
Okay.
It's going to be like pretty filled. Mm-hmm. But then the place is huge. It's an old bunker.
Okay.
You know, they have this other room. But yeah, that booth, I just felt so comfortable. Like you could really hear everything, you know?
Sounds great.
You know, and just be inside the music and like every little change of knob that you do, you can hear it, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're booking classy acts too. You know,
yeah, not definitely.
Just subscribing to trends, it seems like, and whatnot. It's interesting too, because a lot of people are like Wuppertal, which for those who aren't in Germany, like it's kind of like this middle of nowhere in Germany. Yeah. But I remember it because it used to be quite big on the weekends back when CLR was really popping off in the late aughts. It was doing the CLR night at Bhutan, I think, or something.
Yeah.
And it was one of those classic stories where people would just come from all the small towns around and it would actually be pretty raging. It was cool. So I had some good nights there.
But it's not far from like the big cities, kind of, you know, like you have.
Yeah, it's doable.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so worth it, actually.
Yeah. It's nice to get out of town and try something new for a night.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
Like. And I'm sure, like, I don't even know what it costs, but I can't imagine a little cheap hotel or Airbnb being too expensive out there.
Yeah, definitely. So
if you're listening to the show and you want something different, everybody keeps talking about this place, so give it a shot.
For sure. You won't regret it.
Nice. And then, let's see. We got that one out of the way. What is there like a part of your collection and for DJing that we'd be surprised to know about?
That people would be surprised to know about?
Yeah, like are you like a closet drum and bass head or house guy or something, or are you just techno through and through?
For partying, yeah, definitely.
Nothing wrong with that, but
I listen to a lot of stuff, but. A party, to answer your question, I actually started this concept in Brussels of Sunday afternoons with two of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of stopped it because I didn't have the time anymore. It's called Metropolis.
Okay.
And it's a Sunday afternoon. They do it like once every 2 months, something like that. And they're booking like super nice acts, class acts, like not super known or like having a big followers thing on social media, but really nice DJs and really nice artists,
incredible.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's such a nice vibe, man. Like Sunday afternoon, actually, just that setting, just the fact that it's at that time and that day, it changes a lot.
I get it.
You know?
I mean, like, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a... It's not like it's in the morning where you still have the Saturday night people who are completely wasted. No, you know, like it starts at 3 p.m. So it's people who wake up, have a shower, get a, you know, breakfast, like, and come to listen to the music.
Totally.
You know, like you hardly need to actually have someone checking who's coming in at the door, because the people who are coming in at that moment, it's already like the good people.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I actually started a Sunday party, I think in 2006, with a couple other guys called Communion in Minneapolis.
Mm.
Still happening to this day. I kind of gave up my share around 2014 was probably the last 13 or 14. I had moved to Europe, and I'm like, I can't be involved in a weekly summer party. But it was the same thing, except we... Since it was in 2006, it was really inspired by, like, you know, Miami, Ibiza, all that kind of shit, Luciano, Loco Dice. And we would play acid house, a little bit of techno, whatever, nothing too crazy. But just like you said, people come out because they, they actually want to dance or just have a few drinks,
yeah.
but they're not. Or, you know, maybe there are people that are up from the night before, but Minneapolis was not that raging of a city, you know. Yeah. But it really was a cool vibe. And, well, it still is. It's still going off, actually. But like you said, you don't really have to worry about who's coming in at the door because it's usually the right people for the right reasons, you know.
It's like self-filtering, you know.
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old and boring, but there's something to be said. I really like the fact that you can go out and have a little party and then still be home by 11 p.m. and watch some Game of Thrones, the new episode, and go to bed. Exactly.
You know? It's amazing. For sure.
And you said it's still going on?
It's still going on. It's still going on. And
how often?
It's once every 2 months, more or less.
Okay. But
yeah, it's Metropolis BXL for Brussels.
Okay.
Yeah. People should check that out if they come to Brussels.
But is that the name of the space or the name of the party?
The name of the party.
Okay.
The space depends. Sometimes
it just moves around.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you do like outdoor ones in the summer or anything? Or?
We did it once with this collective. It was a queer collective. It was a super nice one, actually. But it's outdoors is a bit hard in Brussels. You have to know the right people and the right connections.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Switching it up a little bit here, do you have any other hobbies that you want to share?
I like playing video games.
Right on, man. What are you playing?
Like, what am I playing right now?
Yeah.
I'm playing Baldur's Gate 3.
I went real hard on that.
Yeah?
Yeah, too hard.
Yeah, like, it went out and I had, like... I was super busy for the longest time. I just started playing, like, finally, like, seriously... And I actually got like a Steam Deck, you know, so I can play on my travels. Man, it's so nice, actually. Like, I just got it and I'm so happy.
Yeah, you know? I kind of want to get one. I've just taken on a little too much responsibilities at the moment, but I was figuring it out, like, if I can get all my adult stuff in order by the summer.
Yeah.
And I want to do another album. If I can get all that done, I'd be like, wow, I might have real free time on my hands for the first time in a while, and then I could get into more things. Like I wouldn't mind doing another playthrough of BG3, but I don't know if it's gonna happen just yet.
Yeah.
I need, for me, like, whether it's vacations or video games or partying or whatever, like I need all my ducks in a row to be in a row for like making money or work. And if I can rest a lot easier, and I don't feel bad if I screw off for a day or whatever. But if I don't have that guarantee, I feel bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I can definitely get addicted to that stuff. I don't allow myself to play much, but it's one of those things where if I don't have anything going on, I could easily wake up and just spend 3 days and not talk to anybody. Just do the stupidest shit. But
it's so nice as well. Like, you just disconnect and...
You have to get disconnect. To
this, it's...
I try to force myself to do it a little more these days, but it's kind
tricky,
of a workaholic.
Right? Yeah.
I'll get there though, and it's gonna be fun and
whatnot. Yeah, I really like cinema as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. During COVID I watched so many movies.
I did too.
Like, I went to the rabbit hole of even going to like old Japanese movies like Akira Kurosawa, that kind of stuff, you know.
Have you been watching Shogun?
Shogun, yeah.
I haven't started it yet, but...
Oh, you have to.
Yeah.
It's really nice. We watched the last two episodes yesterday with my partner.
That's
crazy shit, man.
A lot of my TV time, the little that I have, is dictated mainly by what also my partner will watch. And, nothing wrong with that, but then I usually end up saving all my dumb shit. I like stand-up comedy and whatnot. I'll save that for, like, trips or something when I'm at the airport or whatever.
Yeah, I like some as well, some stand-up comedy.
I also like started rewatching Sopranos again because I watched it when it came out on TV.
Okay, 20 that's a
years
long
ago.
Time
was,
ago.
Yeah, I'm an old guy now, you know. But it's one of those things, like as soon as I put the show on and that theme song comes on, I'm not even joking, one of my cats comes flying in the room and jumps on my lap, like, cat fucking loves Sopranos. I can't wait. It's just gonna sit on my lap and just be happy. And Doesn't do that with any other show.
Wow.
So now I just kind of put the show on because I know the cat will come and sit with me. Right on. I think I'm kind of wrapping up on questions here. Is there anything that you wanted to try and squeeze in that you feel that people should know about?
Well, not necessarily. Yeah. I'm sorry. You have to. I'm not really.
No.
Well,
I guess I was more. I didn't phrase that correctly. But is there anything worth plugging? You know, this is going to be probably about a month after we record this. It'll come out, something like that. So,
podcast, there's
my releases.
Yeah, gigs. My next release is coming this Friday, 29th of March. So yeah, super excited. Check it out if you don't know about it.
On Bandcamp, it'll be available. Is it also on Beatport and all that stuff too?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah.
And then any other like exciting festival gigs people should check out or anything?
Oh yeah, this summer, I got quite a lot of festivals. I'm excited. The Stone Techno.
I hear great things about that.
Yeah, me too. I heard so many great things. So looking forward to finally be
there.
What
day do you play there?
I think it's Saturday. It's actually a Fuse tour night.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the 3rd years, we're doing the small tour, like international. And it's going to be part of it. Super excited. Going to play B2B with GGFM.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then... you're coming to the States for me and in July. That'll be fun.
Yeah, gonna, for sure, man. So looking forward.
It's in the fucking backwoods, and you'll get out there. And like, honestly, I've been in the backwoods of, farm country of Belgium. And you'd be like, wow, it kind of really looks pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But it'll be cool. Are you doing like a little tour on then? Or are you just?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to start off with New York. Then Minneapolis and Toronto, Canada. And then afterwards, it's going to be Colombia.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be America.
Man, those are all fun stops. Like last summer, actually, around the time of the festival. No, it was in May. I did Toronto. That was badass. And then I did, Basement. That was killer. I get to go to New York quite a lot, and that was one of the first gigs that really felt like, to me anyway, New York, how it was before the pandemic.
Because
like it's still good, but it's a little different now. But that was something special. Yeah. So,
I'm actually like quite surprised there's this flourishing scene in the States. Like for a while, relatively. I was thinking there wasn't much happening. I mean, maybe it's just like because we're so disconnected geographically. I mean, simply put, but I always thought to myself, like, actually, techno comes from there. Like, why hasn't it been like this, this super culture? I don't know. I always felt like maybe not much was happening, you know?
Well, I mean, sometimes that's the truth. Yeah. The other part of it is, a lot of America is pretty draconian. Most places will have to, they shut down at 2 because of the bar sales. New York, I think it's 4 or the bar sales are at 2, but it closed at 4. I forget that.
Mm.
Miami has the ability to go all night. Vegas as well, but Vegas isn't really a techno town.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's really surprised that LA actually is a 2 a.m. bar time, but that's why... Mm. It's really all about the warehouse parties in LA because like the clubs, the Hollywood shit, that's like bottle service stuff, you know?
Yeah.
They don't really want to go out all night anyway, you know? So yeah, man, I mean, I'm lucky to tour the States every year, multiple times per year. And, you know, some cities ebb and flow, like all of a sudden you'll have cities you never expected that start popping off.
Yeah.
And the parties are good. The fees get better and you're like, wow, this is cool. And then, you don't hear anything for a year and a half and you find out that the cops cracked down or, you know, the owner of the club got busted for drugs or going after some girl or something. And then it kind of kills everything.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, but right now I would say it's pretty healthy in the States. People definitely want to party. Like everywhere, inflation is out of control.
Yeah.
So there's things going on, but it's really hard to, you know, get big fees there because everybody needs a cut of everything. It's the airlines, hotel, like, you know, hotel in a normal city, that's going to be $300-$400 minimum. And like, sometimes that's half a DJ's pay or whatever if you're coming up or whatever. Indeed. So there's cool shit going on, but it's not always easy to pull it off. It's not like Europe yet, but I'm optimistic, and I know a lot of people are feeling pretty inspired right now.
Yeah. I was super surprised when I saw, like, on my Bandcamp, I checked, like, you have these demographics and stuff, and, like, in the top 10 cities, there were 7 from the States.
Really?
Like, of people who support my music.
Okay.
Like, I was super surprised when I saw that, actually. You know, like...
That's awesome.
Like, even Berlin was, like, number 7 or something, you know?
That's cool, man. Yeah. I mean...
And I was like, wow, okay, like, something is happening. But, like, I was just seeing it, like, through the lens of my own, personal experience. But, yeah.
People are excited to see you, you know? Like, I wanted to have you on just because I thought it'd be cool. I'm like, I don't really know if this is going to work, but it'll be dope music. And then once it was on, like, the actual response was pretty cool. So
nice.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Super looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up here. It's been a fun talk, man.
Yeah, definitely.
And it sounds like we'll be seeing each other soon. So
yeah, for sure.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you.